Sportsnet 590. 590. The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm J.D. Bunkus. It was Forfar with me. Again, insane roller coaster night for Canada basketball fans that have been following Andrew Wiggins his entire career. If you would have asked me would this ever happen when we were in the midst of watching his tenure with the Minnesota Timberwolves as Jimmy Butler was leaving town with tales of whooping Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns' ass with the backups, I would have said no. That was quite a fun one. But where does the series sit now? Can you come back from a loss like that if you're Boston? What does this mean for Steph Curry? Tons of questions to ask our next guest, who is our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Chris Mannix, senior NBA writer for Sports Illustrated and co-host of the Crossover podcast, which is excellent, and, of course, analyst for NBC Sports Boston. Good morning, Chris.
What's going on, guys?
Just watching terrific NBA Finals. We'll get into Andrew Wiggins in a second. I just need to ask you the Boston side of this first, though, which is they hit more threes. They shoot a better percentage from three. They get more free throws. They turn the ball over a ton. But Steph Curry doesn't hit a three-point shot. Can you come back from a loss like that? Like, can you afford to drop a game where that version of Golden State shows up or that version of Steph Curry shows up and still find a way to beat that Warriors team?
Well, I think the Celtics are one of the few teams that can, largely because they've been really resilient all season long, from the roller coaster that was the first 2 months of the season to facing elimination twice already in these playoffs. When they were down 3-2 against Milwaukee and came back to win. The Celtics have to know that as much as Golden State is their problem, they are their own worst enemy. You know, these turnovers have been disastrous for this team. Another 18 in game five that led to 22 points off turnovers. You can draw a straight line between the number of turnovers and losses for the Celtics. When they commit 16 or more, they lose. When they commit less than 12, they win. So if you're Boston, you go home knowing if you just protect the basketball a little bit more, you're going to give yourself a great chance to win no matter what happens on the Golden State side of the floor. So it's a challenge, no doubt about it, and the Warriors have to be brimming with confidence having won with Steph playing that type of game. But, you know, the Celtics, as much as anything, have to look internally for the adjustments, going into Game 6.
I guess the only fear I would have if I'm a Celtics fan is this 9 turnovers between Tatum and Brown in that game. And there are these weird moments where Brown he can't dribble properly. And it gets butterfingers and he just drops the basketball when he's like going towards the basket. And Tatum, like, some of the shot selection has been criticized. Do you think that this is like a too much too soon thing for them? Like, maybe that they've gotten a little bit tired as they've entered like this depth of the playoffs? Like, what's your theory as to why the fourth quarters have looked maybe this way with the two of these guys?
I don't think it has to do with fatigue at this point. The NBA Finals are so spaced out that, you know, these guys do get a couple of days off in between games. And look, they've been turning the ball over all postseason. This is not something new for the Celtics. They just, for whatever reason, they inflict these wounds on themselves, and it's created all these problems. So I don't know. I don't think it has anything to do with fatigue or the magnitude of the moment. These are two guys that have played in conference finals before, made deep playoff runs at different stages of their careers. So, you know, I think they're prepared for it. It's just they get sloppy with the ball. And for Tatum especially, you know, this Game 6 is going to be huge for him. The last time he faced a Game 6 in this situation, he had 46 points against Milwaukee. He needs to have that type of game in Game 6 back in Boston, then maybe a comparable game in Game 7 if the series returns to San Francisco. I mean, he's an all-NBA player, first-team type of guy, MVP candidate. He's got to play like one in his game because he's not yet had a true breakout game in this series. His final stat line last night was fine. It was 27 points, 10 of 20 from the floor. But, you know, all those points came in bunches, whether it was late in the first, early in the second quarter, third quarter. When the game counted in the fourth, Tatum was 1 for 5, and he had 4 points. And that's just unacceptable for a Celtics team that needs Tatum to play like a superstar.
On the other side of this, how much do you think the credit can go to the Golden State Warriors and how they're able to close out games, and how much of that is their championship experience and their pedigree of knowing what it takes to win these games?
I don't know that it's their experience, because their experience is lumped into like 3 or 4 guys. And the guys that played well last night, beginning with Andrew Wiggins, have never played in the finals before. I'm sure it benefits them to have calming voices in huddles and guys that are comfortable with the ball in their hands on the floor. But, you know, where would this team be without Andrew Wiggins and what he did? Kevon Looney in the fourth quarter, he made some plays down the stretch. Jordan Poole and Gary Payton the second, role players who have never played in the finals, were making plays for this team. And, you know, when Steph was struggling, they turned and leaned on those guys, and they stepped up and made plays. I mean, I heard Brian Windhorst on ESPN say this last night, and he's right. Like, this, you know, Golden State spends a lot of money on their payroll. Like, their total compensation, you know, when you include luxury tax, is north of $350 million, you know, for this team. And, you know, you saw kind of the benefits of that in this game, where, you know, they paid, you know, Jordan Poole, they paid Gary Payton, they paid Andrew Wiggins, they paid all these guys to be on this roster. And when their superstar was struggling, they had enough depth to compensate for it.
Yeah, and, you know, we just celebrated, and I say that seriously, we just celebrated the 2019 third-year anniversary yesterday, the Raptors championship run, and was reflecting on, like, the differences between this Warriors team and the one that we saw in 2019. And, like, that's the thing, right, is obviously they were constructed differently and they had KD on the payroll, but, like, they had to go to, like, Quinn Cook in that series, and they had to go to DeMarcus Cousins coming off of an injury. And, yeah, this Warriors team has taken a lot of flack throughout this series of, like, it's Steph Curry. And it's a group that he's having to carry, because it's not the same Klay Thompson, and it's not, you know, the same Draymond Green. But yeah, I thought one of the most impressive things with the Warriors yesterday was that, like, everybody that was in the rotation had really did chip in and helped carry Steph Curry through those struggles. And I guess before we talk about, like, those role players and, like, Wiggins specifically, what do you think those Warriors saved Wiggins from, or sorry, from, Steph Curry from, narrative wise? Like, if he has that game and the Celtics end up winning it, they steal that one, what do you think the conversations around Steph are like today?
Yeah, they're probably a reversal of the conversations we had after game four. I mean, after game four, it was, you know, Steph Curry strapped this team to his back and carried them. This could be Steph Curry's finest finals performance. This is the year that he wins finals MVP. If they go down in game five with Steph having that kind of shooting night, it's a complete reversal of everything we talked about, you know, coming out of game four. And he would have faced some criticism for that. I mean, granted, the Celtics have an elite defense, and Marcus Smart is the reigning defensive player of the year. But, you know, for Steph to struggle like that in a loss in a pivotal game, it would have completely changed the narrative. Fortunately for him, he did have guys backing him up. I thought Draymond played his best game of the finals in this one, even though he still didn't have a large number of points, but his impact was on the game was everywhere, and it lifted Steph up. And, you know, the Golden State was fortunate to have a bunch of guys there that could deliver.
So the guy who delivers the most is Andrew Wiggins, and it's a bigger story. It was a big story on social yesterday, but, like, it's a bigger story up here. I do get it, because, listen, this guy we've been following since he was in junior high. He had the nickname Maple Jordan. We broadcast every single one of his college games on national television here in Canada when he was at Kansas. But where are you at just with, like, Wiggins' career arc narrative, given what he has done so far this postseason? Again, like the 26-13 with plus the defense yesterday.
Well, I mean, I think Steve Kerr said it exactly right after the game, that sometimes you just need to find the right fit if you're an NBA player. It's as much about that as it is anything else. Wiggins early on was miscast as a leading man. He just isn't that guy. He looked like he could be that guy coming out of Kansas and certainly in the prep years before that. But he just is not that guy on an NBA level. He can't be what his college teammate Joel Embiid eventually became, a alpha, a number one option on a championship-driven team. That's just not who he is. What he is a guy that absolutely, and is proving in this series, he can be a number two option on a championship team. I mean, the last two games have been remarkable for Andrew Wiggins. I mean, going into game four, or in game three, the Warriors just clobbered on the boards by the Celtics. They were beat by double digits in rebounds. Wiggins comes out, has 16 rebounds in game four, and Golden State beats up the Celtics on the glass in that win. Game five, more of the same. Scoring, rebounding, defending Jason Tatum throughout this game. Look, he just has found the exact role that he was meant to be in. Somebody that is required to do a lot, but is not required to carry his team. And if he can stay in this role, this type of role, for the rest of his career, he is going to erase all the ugliness from early on in his career when he looked like something of a draft bust. Now, the Minnesota experience, not entirely his fault. I mean, four head coaches in 6 years is a lot for an NBA player, and it really impacts your ability to get some continuity. In the 2.5 years he's been in Golden State, one coach, one front office, largely the same set of teammates that have been around him. That is invaluable for an NBA player. So, you know, Wiggins has found just the situation and the fit that works for him. And if he can stay with this organization, with this group, you know, he is going to have – his career is going to go in a completely different direction over the next 5 or 6 years.
Well, this is why, like, when we see GMs – and they do the old first-round pick or high-end prospect. They try to do the redraft thing where they try to grab somebody on the cheap or they try to trade for somebody of pedigree. And normal, like most of the time, it doesn't pan out, right? Like that's just the way that things operate in this league and in professional sports in general. But I really do think that this is going to be kind of like one of those measuring stick things that we compare these kind of moves to, these trades to, is Wiggins. Is like, it will entice general managers potentially, or, I mean, further entice them to make moves like this, because they'll be able to point to Andrew Wiggins and go like, yeah, this is what happens. You bring in the right guy, the right fit, and maybe this is the role that they can have. I think you're bang on. I feel bad for Minnesota because they were justified in, I don't know, moving off of him. Maybe not for the price that they did, but yeah, I think it's huge for Wiggins. Sorry, I'm losing my voice here.
JD's been sick. Sorry about that. I guess where he was going with that, JD, was more Wiggins. I can see him on the Zoom. He's struggling. Yeah, Wiggins and his career arc. I don't want to use your question for you, but
yeah, we were just talking about Wiggins' career arc. Yes, sorry, career. I just lost my voice. Yeah. All I was going to say there is like I am kind of curious as to what the future of this Warriors team now is going to look like too, and whether or not this is going to be a scenario where he stays, or you think that they continue to play like these luxury taxes and try to keep this group together.
Well, look, if any team can afford to pay the luxury tax, it's Golden State. You know, a big market team that plays in a private building that is effectively an ATM. I mean, the Chase Center is a license to print money. So they've got the resources to continue to be deep in the luxury taxpayers for years to come. The biggest question is going to be what they do with their young pieces. I mean, they have remarkably, you know, one of the most attractive roster full of young players that any team in the league has. James Wiseman, former number two pick in the draft, has not played a minute this season. Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, these are lottery picks who are sitting on the bench right now, occasionally playing in garbage time. I mean, they have a group of guys that potentially could contribute and transition this team into another era in the years to come, or be packaged in a deal for somebody like a Bradley Beal or a Damian Lillard or somebody along those lines to keep this championship window with this group open for years longer. So I think, you know, to spin it back to Wiggins, like he has a chance to be part of something really special. I mean, Wiggins, what is he, 26, something like that? I mean, feels like he's been in the league forever, but he's got a long way to go in terms of his NBA career. He's just really entering his prime as an NBA player. So I think he's got a chance to do some special things over the next 5 or 6 years with a Warriors team that could be really, it probably will be really good for that during that time period.
So last one before we let you go here. We're 9 days to the NBA draft, which is shocking. Like, the series is going to end, and it's going to be like, boom, the NBA draft starts. The Raptors have had some weird buzz. OG's name has been thrown into some trade rumors. Trent's status is kind of unclear. You never really know with the Raptors because the rumors, I think we've even talked about this with you before specifically, is like usually the smoke that comes out around them, you're more dubious about it than even most of the teams around basketball. But have you heard anything on Toronto or have a feel for what Masai might be open to this offseason or in the next couple of weeks?
Well, Toronto has been one of the teams that I've heard connected to Rudy Gobert. If the Jazz decide to shake things up and move off of him, it would take a lot to extract Gobert from Utah. Danny Ainge, you know, in his years in Boston, was one of the hardest bargains amongst NBA executives. So it might be a challenging deal to make, but you know, that's someone I could certainly see the Raptors showing some interest in if they're willing to part with an Ananobi and some draft consideration as well. But that's really the only name I've heard connected right now to Toronto.
Chris Mannix, we very, very much appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You got it, guys.
Take care. Again, that's Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated, co-host of the Crossover Podcast, analyst for NBC Sports Boston. And that insider had been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. I love this for the content, that we're going to finish the NBA Finals. And you're like, oh, no, we're in the summer. It's like, nope, it'll be Raptors rumor season. I still, personally, as good of a defensive player as Rudy Gobert is during the regular season, I think that's the kind of player he is a regular season player. Chris, he's one of the best insiders in all of basketball. He's a truly connected guy. I always wonder with things like the OG rumor whether or not
there's always
it's
an OG rumor.
Well, no, I wonder where it's driven, like where it's coming from. And I would have to feel like that rumor is more started by somebody in Utah, like, hey, if we were going to shop this guy, where could he go? And the Raptors just played a series against Joel Embiid, a 7-footer, and they famously did not have someone to guard Joel Embiid in that way. They got Precious Achiuwa as their starting center next year. Like, he's 6'9".
Well, even the OG rumors previously, what was it, like a couple days ago, where he was dissatisfied in his role, like, the same thing. We think that those type of rumors come from the rival teams that are stirring the pot, right?
I don't know about that one. Like, there's some, I guess, this is, again, it's all about who has what to gain. There's the Malachi Flynn's dad that has been vocal in terms of things. Like, yeah, just, I think that there's at least enough buzz around OG that it's a little bit of a something. But my main takeaway from it is just, like, he's a coveted player around basketball. You're looking around the league right now. Look how important these wings are. Like, look at Andrew Wiggins in the series, right? Like, Andrew Wiggins doesn't need to be the best offensive player, but you can see him being the second best player on a team. He's 27 years old. He's coming into his full into his own with the right fit. And I could see how a team around basketball is looking at OG saying, well, that guy's 3 years younger, and he's got a pretty similar athletic profile to Wiggins. He's a better shooter than Andrew Wiggins. He's a better defender than Andrew Wiggins. No, he doesn't have the ball handling, the ability to create a shot in the same way, but he's arguably like just as good of a rebounder. He's someone that you don't have to teach to compete to in the same way. Why wouldn't we want to try to go get that guy and put him around our team? And, yeah, potentially have him be higher up in the pecking order. I think that they just look at him and say, there's Scottie Barnes and there's Siakam, and how does he fit into that mix of wings? And is he going to be comfortable with that role? Like, so much of the Wiggins story that we're discussing is how comfortable Wiggins is with the role. And so I think it's natural for people to question that with OG, but until there's actual, like, real tangible smoke of him not being happy with it, not just, like, the odd body language pickup or the odd report that's kind of, you know, layer of, I've heard this, but then this other kind of report counters it. I'm not buying much into it. I just really do think that people look at him and say, this is a guy who has more to offer, He was someone that we thought was going to win Most Improved Player of the Year award this year, like a lot of people did. Zach Lowe had him down for that. He didn't come through on that potential. Scotty Barnes became such a big deal that it's just, it's kind of basketball's nature for people to go, well, do they have too many guys? There's only one basketball kind of thing. And I don't know. I think OG's fit is good. The Raptors are just in a tough spot because they can't really trade much from their core because anything they lose, like, they desperately need because they don't have a lot of depth. But are they really going to be able to address much with a draft pick? We know that they're not signing anybody, like, beyond a mid-level extension. Like, something's got to bend or break eventually mm-hmm. here. I just think that for now, I would be cautioning the patience, and I would be saying, to me, the Raptors' most clear route to the next championship is by keeping OG Anunoby with Scotty Barnes and hoping that those two guys' timelines match up where OG is a number two. And maybe not a number two in the traditional sense, but a number two in terms of most important players. I think that could still be a thing for him. Let's take a break because it's time for Wake and Rake. What did we do yesterday? I hit. You hit?
Yeah, big time. Jays over 5.5 runs.
Yeah.
They did that in one inning alone.
Yeah, they did. This was a 9-run inning.
I forget what Blake bet.
Yeah, I don't know.
Probably
I think
lost.
Blake won, too. No, I think.
We hit the Wake and Rake?
I think we hit the Wake and Rake, and we just, like, we're not even aware of it. I also, by the way, gave out the Andrew Wiggins double-double, which I didn't get any credit for.
Nice.
I was like, gave that plus 375, and guess what? Bing bong.
The Golden State winning the third quarter didn't hit, but I didn't tell you to do that yesterday.
Did not.
I said
did
it
not.
Was a good trend.
Yeah. But you kept it to yourself.
I did.
The Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet, is next.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of actors.
Show me the money.
With JD, Blake, and Ailish.
Wake up, you piece of sh**.
It's time for the Wake and Rake. Brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. Back-to-back wins for the Wake and Rake parlay. Don't see enough bet slips in my DMs, got to tell you. Don't see enough bet slips. I feel like we got cold for like a week and a half, and everyone just gave up on us and was like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. You just missed out on another massive parlay win. No big deal. You're poor. We're rich. It's whatever. If you ever wonder, like, where? He's like, why am I where I am with my lot in life? It's like, that's because you didn't listen to that Wake and Rake those last 2 days. That's why. Could have been rich. Could have been you. Also gave out, like I mentioned, plus 375 with Andrew Wiggins hitting a double-double. Click, clack. That ended up hitting. And Blake gave the bonus JD bet, which I did actually end up betting, which was the under first five innings. Yeah, it did. It hit. Yeah, I bet it. You know what's funny? I put more money on that than my own Wake and Rake pick that also hit. But I felt like such a fraud, and I felt like I had cursed the Wake and Rake by doing that later on, that I didn't go with my main bet. But no, yes, everything hits. The Wake and Rake, the pockets are flush. Everybody's rolling. Everybody's feeling good. I think that we're all going to fight for Ailish's bet, though, from now on, is like anytime the Jays play the Orioles, like over the runs. Like it's and
I get
the
to
Jays
go first.
To hit the runs. Yeah, the Jays to score those baseball runs.
Yeah, anytime my Jays setup is so, this guy has a bad
sucks.
Fastball that he throws straight and right over the plate all the time.
Yeah. Is that today?
He profiles like the guy that they just hit 9 runs off of on Friday.
He was going pretty good for a little while there. I was like, oh, it's not bad, Kyle Brad.
Like
2 runs and then bang, 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 everything out of the park. Yeah, I'm sure you're going to talk a lot about Alek Manoah today on your show. I do want to just quickly ask you, like, what – do you think that we've kind of almost, in a weird way, I hate when we do this, like we frame things like this, but I'm running out of ways to like frame what he's doing. But like, Ailish and I were talking about it off the top of the show, this dude is different than every other pitcher. Like, he's this mountain of a man. He's this gregarious guy. He's not, like, people compare him to Roy Halladay and go, but he's the opposite in terms of demeanor, where like Roy Halladay was like, nobody talk to me or I'll throw a fit. And like, you know, nobody say a damn word to me, yeah. or you're at you're taking out yourself to a loss. Manoa yeah. is
Roy
there,
Halladay
like,
would have ended the Barrio on his start.
Dude, what's hilarious about Alek Manoah is that I think he would have been like Roy Halladay's least favorite teammate ever. Like, he would have just been, hey, Roy.
Well,
hey,
you
Roy,
remember
hey,
AJ Burnett came
yeah.
in, and it was like,
yeah, of course.
At first,
yes,
they were so
famously.
Different. And then eventually, Burnett was like, oh, no, this guy ended Boy up making clone. Me way more money in my career and
yeah.
stretching my career out because I learned so much watching him.
Right.
But yeah, although you could end up with like, because Manoah is so good, you could end up with like a, how, like the scenario where Fred VanVleet begrudgingly likes Scotty Barnes. Because the performance is behind it. Yeah. Maybe Halladay just loved yeah. winning enough that he would deal yeah. with Manoah.
Hey, no, he would have loved the winning. There's no doubt about that. And I'm sure they actually would have gotten along just fine. Because guess what? Alek Manoah, what he does share with Roy Halladay is that he cares about baseball. Alek Manoah is a throwback. Like, I complain about this sometimes where I go, oh, the youth of today. But I really do feel this where a lot of modern athletes, I don't think, care as much about their sports as athletes used to. Like, the way you used to get your paycheck was if you were a great athlete. Like, you had to maintain it, and then maybe you could get a few millions of dollars. Like, Anthony Davis, we talked about him earlier on the show today. The guy's, like, openly admitting that he hasn't touched a basketball for months. It's like, okay, man, that's super cool. Cool how you don't love basketball. Like, that's cool, man. But like, that really is sort of a thing, right? Is so many athletes want to be like entrepreneurs. They don't want to just be viewed as athletes, which is fine. Like, again, it's great. I don't care, but it's just, it's different. And it's not my personal favorite when it comes to athletes. Manoah is this dude who's like, all I care about is baseball. All I care about is getting better at baseball. I like to be at the baseball game. I like to be throwing the baseball. I don't want you to take me off the mound. I want to talk to other people about baseball. When I'm not playing baseball, I want to watch baseball. It's my whole life. It's my raison d'etre. It's all I want to do. It's given me everything that I have. And then he's so good at it. Like, it's just, it's incredible that this guy's a rookie. Like, we do that with Kirk, right? Where you have to remind yourself, like, this dude's 23 years old. He's like, it doesn't feel that way because of the way he looks. And I think Manoah fits that category where you're like, he's this mountain and he fits in and he carries himself the way that you're like, oh, right. This is literally his first calendar year of being a professional baseball player.
Yeah. You know how many starts Alek Manoah made in the minor leagues? 9.
Yeah.
Fewer starts than he's already yeah. made this year. He's made like
9 more than Blake Murphy.
Yeah, Sportsnet Stats has been doing this thing where it's like, you know, every game it's a new Alek Manoah stat of like, oh, your first 30, your first 33, your first whatever, and it's incredible. I look at his game log for this year. He's had 12 starts. He's gone 6 or more in 11 of them. Mm-hmm. He's only had to go over 100 pitches once. And then you look at Baseball Reference does a game score that tries to like snapshot a pitcher's performance on a scale 0 to 100. By that metric, he hasn't had a single below average start this year. 12 times mm-hmm. out, 11 times you're getting 6-plus innings. They're not high-stress 6-plus innings because he's not throwing a ton of pitches. And at worst, you're getting an average outing from him. It's remarkable.
It really is. It really is. I wonder what number of start he'll have where he does that for our producer Daniele to give him some respect and say he's one of the best, you know, 45 pitchers in baseball or whatever it was that he was saying the other day.
What is that? Daniele doesn't like the, well, he's not missing as many bats now.
Daniele thinks, he's like, I think he's a top 30 pitcher in baseball. It's like, well, that's kind of you, you know, like he's like, I think he's the top 25 pitcher in baseball. I was like, oh, okay.
So yeah, top 30 pitcher. Something. You mean all time?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. It's okay though. Yeah. Daniele, it's tough. It's tough. Daniele's like must win game. Kikuchi or Manoah is a toss up. Kikuchi made an all-star team. Manoah hasn't. It's tough. Daniele might give him his flowers one of these days. Maybe when
Daniele, does Daniele have Ray's brain where he's like, no, actually I'd use an opener. We'll do a bullpen day. Sorry, he's not like that at all. He's probably so mad right now.
Oh yeah, this is my favorite bit. Like,
you gotta go look at his tweet from like 6:01.
This bit is gonna last for so many years. So Manoah is doing great. Blake, I also gotta get, before we get into our best bets today, before we get into tonight's Jays game, where are you at with like the Wiggins story, the finals. I wanted to give you a chance to talk about this today because, you know, your show is purely baseball. And so I did want to talk to you for a brief moment about, like, I talked about this earlier, like a lot of us, and I know that you count in this category, watched Wiggins all the way back to when he was still playing high school ball in Canada. Like, there's the famous Pangos versus Wiggins YouTube video that we all watched. We watched and paid attention to his prep school numbers. We watched him go to Kansas. We watched these games. We've tracked him through the trade, the ups and downs, the Canada basketball stories, the shoe deal, the big contract extension, the Jimmy Butler clash, the trade. And kind of to see him do this, I said, like, I actually felt emotional watching it. Like, I felt like, wow, there's so many different angles of looking at this in terms of, you know, what fit does for potential, what a role does for somebody, the way that we cast top prospects and the expectations that we put on their shoulders, the narratives that we build about people. It just, like, there was a lot that ended up kind of cascading as Wiggins threw that dunk down in the fourth quarter to punctuate, like, his 26th point of the night. I wonder kind of how you're feeling about Andrew Wiggins as, like, you know, it feels like he's been with us forever, even though he's only 27 years old, but, like, it has been a real journey.
Yeah, that, like, that college season is 2013, 2014. That's way back. That's like, I'm doing draft coverage at the Score at that point. And, you know, I remember Wiggins was the presumptive number one pick, and you almost had to defend him at the time because that was an open year, and everyone was doing that thing where, well, if you're the presumptive number one pick, we got to knock you down. It's not about building Jabari Parker up. It's about knocking you down as the number one guy. So, it's been a long time defending Wiggins. There was a stretch there in Minnesota where I think I was the last one left on Wiggins Island. And then it was like, I think it was the 2019 World Cup or whatever, where he didn't come out again. And it's like, you know what? Enough of this. He's come around. And I think in basketball, it's especially hard to appreciate the path that Wiggins has gone through because so many guys are who they are within, like, by the time your rookie contract's up, we know who you are. If you're going to be a star, you're at least a borderline star at that point. Wiggins is in his eighth season, and it's taken him struggling as a rookie. It's taken him being forced into a number one or 1B role that didn't suit him. And this is his third season in Golden State. I'd say he started figuring it out pretty much right away in Golden State, but not quite to this degree. Sometimes it takes guys a while to figure out who they are. And I think that this playoffs has been, it's one thing to do it in the regular season when the Warriors aren't winning and you know, the pressure's not quite there. And then Draymond and Klay and Steph are all back and they want a title. And can that scale? Can you do it in the higher pressure situations? And Wiggins has not only done it in the higher pressure situations, he's elevated it in these higher pressure situations. So I think it's awesome for him. I think it's a great just basketball development story of, like you said, sometimes fit and situation matter as much as talent does, as much as work ethic does. And I don't know, to see Wiggins figure it all out, it kind of gives you, if there are other guys out there who are 25 or 26 and haven't quite figured it out yet, you start to reevaluate, you know, like, what's the situation they're in, what's the right thing for you. But it's not because
we're
gonna look at these guys. I'm not talking about a guy who, you know, I'm not talking about some chucker. I'm not gonna be like, oh, if Kobe White got in a situation where someone made him play defense and pass, it's like, no, it's a guy who has the tools to be an elite, not even he's more than an elite role player. He's been their second best player in the finals. But yeah, it's a good reminder that the situation you're in and the role you're in, not everyone is going to be a 1A guy, and that doesn't mean they're not going to have a really good career and contribute to a championship.
Yeah, no, the reason why I brought this up is because you always do the Raptors redraft candidates, and so every year it's always like, hey, who could the Raptors go out and get that had a lot of pedigree? Who's your Giles this year, you know? And, like, the Wiggins thing is going to become...
Still waiting on Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, I'm also still waiting on MKG.
You want to feel really old? He's, like, 30 now.
No, I don't want to know that, and I don't want to know that, but I still have stock, you know? Like, I still have MKG stock in a drawer somewhere. So I think that's a fascinating thing, is like the role thing. I will say, though, in the defense of, like, the Wiggins critics, is like, it was okay, the Kansas thing when he was coming out and he got knocked down, I thought was pretty justifiable because there were so many moments where Kansas was like, be the guy, and he was like, no, Like, there were just so many games. I remember, I even looked back at my old tweets looking at Kansas stuff, and it was like, why isn't Wiggins getting the ball in the last 5 minutes? Like, why isn't he coming to the basketball? And Joel Embiid was such a commanding presence on those teams, and it was like, Embiid was just the man, and he had an opportunity to be the 1B role, and he didn't really thrive in it. Then he goes to Minnesota, and if you remember the early Minnesota years, it was like, he was actually still the 1B, and it was Zach LaVine early on in his career, like actual chucker, not good Zach LaVine, who took like every bad shot on the planet, but he didn't have to be the man right away. Then Towns comes, and it was the same thing. So like, there were all these opportunities for Wiggins to not be the 1A guy, to be a B player, to be the number two guy. And he didn't play defense, and he didn't hustle this way, and he didn't change his shot profile. He didn't never evolve his game past like, oh, here comes Wiggins with a spin move to the basket, or here comes Wiggins with a bad 3-point shot.
Even. Exactly. And I know that that's easier said than done, but like, yeah. You know, when you're kind of transitioning to more of a secondary role, that's the biggest thing you got to be able to do, right, is knock down those open threes. He hasn't even shot well in the playoffs, but he's at least shot well enough the last 2 years that every team respects him out there. And that's how you get those openings where you can drive past the guy for a dunk, is make them close out on you hard. So that's, I don't know. That's
I'm just saying the Warriors deserve credit. Like, part of it is maturity, and part of it is that it's like, boy, championship and culture matters. Like, when it's not just about like fit with role.
And it was
like,
a real question the last 2 years, because he was doing that stuff on a Golden State team that didn't care about making the playoffs. They were doing their red shirt year in the middle of this dynasty. And yeah, it, like, he's gotten better. The Golden State team deserves credit. I'm sure there's a Jama Malalela in his ear, you know, trying to help guide him with this kind of stuff. I got to give some credit to a Raptors person somewhere. Look, I bet he had a hand in Gary Payton too, ending up there too. So
all I'll say is that I'm thrilled for Wiggins.
It's awesome.
I really am happy to see it, even though I had totally given up on the guy's career. I think that, championship culture needs to be recognized in this discussion, and that it shouldn't just be all dismissed as like, oh, Wiggins was just this hard luck guy. It's like,
look at where Minnesota still is.
Winning in the getting through a playoff round. Like, you know, what do you mean? Minnesota, the team that has the best point guard in the NBA, and Patrick Beverly is like, the trade is going to go down as an all-time bad one, especially if Wiseman can ever turn into something. Okay, so moving on to our picks today. Again, it is the Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet, crazy about the odds. We have Blake Murphy along with us. The Blue Jays tonight, guess what? More Orioles games. I tweeted yesterday that they only have 13 games left because I thought that it was the schedule for next year. It's still this year where you have 19 games against your divisional opponents. So 18 games remaining against the Baltimore Orioles. They'll take another one tonight. Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. Do we have enough faith in backing Kikuchi after what we've seen from him the last couple of times, even though it is this dreadful Orioles team?
Not at a -225 money line. Yeah. You could play the prop game tonight. You could look at the over-under on over 9. It's not as if Jordan Lyles is all that menacing or anything like that. He's going to pitch to contact, and you know how that goes with this Jays team. But giving Kikuchi -225 odds, even with a rested bullpen and an Orioles lineup that's below average against lefties, that's -225 is too extreme for this one, I think.
I will say there's also the thought that the Jays just had an outstanding win, that there is some cause for sometimes a little bit of regression after that. If we think the Orioles might win one of these games, is this the game against Kikuchi, who had his worst first inning where he didn't play past the first inning last time? Is there something there? Is he a bounce back game? I don't know. I don't feel less confident about the Blue Jays tonight as I did yesterday, just because of the matchup. And also, last night was a blowout.
I wonder if Kikuchi is the guy that this is going to be this entire season, where he is going to live in extremes, where he's going to, because he throws that nasty stuff from the left side, that he'll string a couple of games together where he's lights out, and you go, they did it again. They did the Robbie Ray thing 2.0 with Yusei Kikuchi. And then as soon as you buy the Kikuchi stock, he's going to go and get shelled and knocked out. He'll show you the bad side of him, which is like, oh, I'm going to walk too many guys. I'm going to lose the control. I'm going to be sweating profusely out on the mound, and I'm not going to get through three innings, and still it's going to take 2 hours. And people are going to go, oh, this guy stinks. Why did we sign this guy? Like, I think that he is just the pitcher that we are going to live in extremes in. And so I'm just going to say that I think it's going to be one way or the other for him tonight. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that this is going to be a continuation of, oh, my God, why this guy? Or it's going to be, ah, you're so lucky to have Kikuchi as your number four. Like, I don't feel comfortable betting on it, though. Like, I don't have a real feel for those extremes. So I'm going to be staying away from tonight. I'm guessing that, Ailish, that you're going to stay with the Blue Jays bats, though, and throw more confidence towards them based on what you were saying earlier.
I do have that play. I have, I think, a little bit more confidence in both teams, though, instead of just the Blue Jays tonight. I like the over.
Oh, yep. Cheering for both sides. Ailish Forfar, the classic.
That I'm cheering for runs in general.
Yeah. Okay.
I like the, so the over is set at 9.5. I think even teasing it down to 8.5, if you're less confident, is still -150, but the over under at 9.5 is plus money. So there is the potential of that. I like.
Under 9 is +100 is what they have it as.
I have over 9.5 on Unibet +104.
Yeah. 104?
Mm-hmm. It just updated because I had it written down from about 30 minutes ago, and now I've just refreshed the site and clicked it, and we're at +104 for
Yeah, it is. It's under 9 is +100. That's it. I have the same refresh on Unibet. I'm still.
So I like that. I think that that's a potential, but I'm just going to go click the refresh on this one just in case they change the lines. But I had total runs in the first 5 innings, the over 5.5 at +102 before that. This was about 30 minutes ago. So if it's updated, I like that. I think that the both pitchers don't give me much confidence to start the game, whether they're going to play more than 4 or 5 innings. I think that if there's going to be a lot of runs scored, it'll be at the beginning of the game. So I'm liking that one. Personally, I'm just trying to find it to do the.
Yeah, it's over 5.5. 5 inning line is +110.
Oh, +110 now. Okay, I had it +102, so it's giving you better odds now. So that's going to be my wake and rake. Not going to just specifically do Jays over 5.5 runs. I'm going to do the first 5 innings over, which is against a JD type of trend. But when you give me the pitching matchup and the uncertainty and how hot the Jays bats have been, I think all those things play into this.
All right. JD, what's your 5 inning under?
Well, I would just say that there's a, like, looking at the track record of these teams, because we do like to do that, there's essentially none except for this. Is that Springer has had 12 ABs against this guy, and his average is 0.83. He has really struggled against this guy, and Chapman has faced Lyles 15 times, 2.67. I don't know what Chapman's status is, if he's like ready to play yet.
Two of those hits were home runs, though.
Yeah, two of those hits were home runs. He has taken him yard, but there's really, like, weirdly for a guy in Lyles, you know, Orioles pitcher, a guy who's been around for a while, really no track record, no sample. And I thought the same thing with the Orioles hitters, that, like, they would have faced Kikuchi at least maybe a couple of times over the last couple of years. Like, no.
Very young team, though, with a lot of guys who haven't been around a while. So
yeah, just I was surprised to see guys like Trey Mancini, only 4 ABs against him. Like, I was like, oh, so you've played him one game? Like, yeah, this is just, yeah. It was just a little surprising to see, like, no track record between either of these two guys with these teams, because I was really trying to pick up on something. I do wonder if there's, like, value tonight on, I usually don't say this, but I do wonder if there's, like, a little bit of value on sprinkling a Vlad home run, considering that, like, he seems to be in a groove right now. He seems like he's picking up one. And it is another
what do you have, three exit velocities over 110 yesterday or something like that?
Usually Vladdy, you know, he usually sits around, I don't have it in front of me again, I already have my best bet in front of me, but usually Vladdy sits around like +350 for a home run. And I would say that, yeah, if you're going for just like a fun, more long shot one, I don't think that it's the worst idea sticking with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. tonight. You're
plus
correct.
+380.
It's +380. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I like that value. I think that's good value, and so I will certainly.
What about a Kirk home little, run? +650.
Yeah. Kirk, I'm just a little less
not 1,000% sure he's going to play also. I'd imagine today's a DH day for him, but the way they've rotated in and out. Although I guess you just get a null bet if he doesn't play.
Yeah, if he doesn't end up playing, which is whatever. But yeah, I would just wait and see if he is actually playing. There's a few things that I really like tonight that I will be playing. I'm not going to go with the latest game. I do kind of like I like this bet. I like the Cubs first five under Chaminade at Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks is having a tough season. I'm not a big Kyle Hendricks guy, but San Diego's offense is
Dartmouth's very own.
Yeah, he's a guy that reliably throughout his career has been a guy who starts games fairly well early. I think the Cubs are in full quit mode, so if he doesn't give them a good start, this one's in big-time trouble. But Manea has been much better. The Cubs have struggled against left-handed pitching, and the Padres have not been a lead offense. Like, basically, they're just like, get around Manny Machado. And that's not easy because Manny Machado basically hit everything in the moon. He's been amazing. But yeah, I think I'm going to be playing that first 500. The other one that I kind of like is Gerrit Cole versus Corey Kluber. That one's a little just lower for me because it's only 3.5. And that spooks me just a little bit with those offenses. But you look at the track record of these two guys against all the batters that are in there tonight. And it's pretty friendly. Like, the Rays have not touched up Gerrit Cole throughout his career. Like, there's basically just G-Man Choi is the only guy that's been, like, really effective against him. And we're talking about,
and
like,
just,
a
like,
real...
a monster performance in a huge sample, too.
It's he hits 500 against him in 16 ABs. Like, it's a real, real, real sample. But you go across the board and the other way around, it's kind of like, there's not a lot of fear. Like, Corey Kluber, surprisingly, has done very, very well against the Yankees. Granted, he's had a long career, and he's been a very good pitcher for a very long time. But I do think that there's at least a little bit something to the fact that, like, he doesn't get completely lit up by a lot of these Yankees players.
Okay,
so I do
one.
Like that one as well. No, I'm picking the Cubs one. I'm going with the dirty, rotten Cubs who are in full quit mode and are going to absolutely tattoo me. But this is a legacy bet. I've bet Kyle Hendricks under... Like, I think the reason I bet first five unders is because of Kyle Hendricks. Like, he was the if you play the game of no runs first inning, the Nerfy, that's what he does. Blake, sorry, I didn't leave you a lot of time because I was...
That's all right. I'm going back to the White Sox. Paid off last night. I'm going White Sox on the run line, so minus 0.5. Unibet calls it the three-way, where it's White Sox, Tigers, and tie for the five inning. I'm going the White Sox side of that. It's minus 130 to get the minus half a run. Dylan Cease against old pal Drew Hutchison coming out of the bullpen for the start today.
Yeah,
I'm just picking on Drew Hutchison here. We're out of time. But White Sox minus half a run, five inning line. Toronto and Baltimore over 5.5, five inning line. And Cubs, Padres under 5.5, five inning line. A lot of five innings. You only got to watch a couple innings of baseball tonight. That's been your Wake and Rake for today, June 14th, presented by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.